to the skies very high.
Hello and welcome to Talking PPG Radio. My name is Will Jones. The following information is not for training, but personal experiences and reflections on the world of power paragliding as I know. All guests of Talking PPG Radio have formed their own ideas, thoughts, and opinions on the world of power paragliding. They are not necessarily the thoughts or opinions of Talking PPG Radio. You may agree or disagree to what you hear. Talking PPG Radio is here to get conversations, thoughts, ideas about the world of power paragliding. Safety first. I highly recommend a qualified instructor. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoy.
Hey, welcome back to Will Jones, Talking PPG Radio. Well, today I have for you the 103 clinic that I attended at the Indy Airhawks fly-in. By now, I'm sure a lot of you know that they offered three clinics for free that you could go to and participate. One was the 103, which you're about to hear. The second one was the Black Devil Motor Maintenance Clinic. And the third one was a Reserve Repack. And I'm basically going to call that one the Repack, not necessarily a clinic, but more of a demonstration. A demonstration clinic. We didn't really get a chance to learn how to do it, but we did get to see one being done and also what actually goes into packing or repacking a reserve, which was really cool. So I recorded the 103, which, like I said, you're about to hear. It was David Graves, which I want to thank him for allowing me to record him and posting it so you guys can hear it. And the second one was Olaf, Indy Air Hogs. The Black Devil Motor Clinic, which I did record it too. I'm not sure if I'm going to post it, but maybe some of you guys would like to hear it that have Black Devils. I run a 122, same on any 122, so, but two strokes a two stroke. And then I did not record the Repack Clinic, which I figured it's best for you guys to actually attend and see it yourself. Like I said, it was more of a demonstration than actually a clinic to learn how to, so which was, it was still really cool. And that was Greg, another Indy Air Hogs, showed us or demonstrated how to repack a reserve, which was really cool. In the 103 clinic, which you're about to hear, and like I said, this is the recording of the 103, so you'll hear some background noise and people asking some questions you might not quite be able to make out, but hopefully you'll be able to just kind of figure out from the answers that David gives to figure out what their question was. So sorry for the sound quality on that, but it's still a lot of great information that David went over. Talk a little bit about Sport Pilot, ultralight rules, PPG 103 airspace, sectional charts, and I'm sure you guys do have a sectional chart for the area that you fly in. Even if you're out in BFE country, you still should have a sectional chart for your area just to make sure you are flying legally. So FAA, just because you don't know, doesn't necessarily mean you're not going to be able to get out of that fine if they come looking. You know, somebody complains and they, you know. So it's best to be, to have the knowledge that you're in the right area. So, but anyway, it was really good. It was nice to be able to go to a fly-in and actually be able to go to something like this. And they were all free too. So, and that was really cool. Just along, it was a part of the fly-in. And I think even if classes are offered, even if a person has to, you know, put a tip jar in there or a choice of like the SIV clinic that they had at the Beach Blast, you know, and things like that, to occupy the time that we have a lot of times. Don't get me wrong, it's nice to be able to sit and talk and socialize and joke and laugh about people going in bean fields. But if you have the opportunity to go to something like this, the time just goes by and you are learning something. Safety, you know, very cool. Very, very nice idea. Very cool idea. So, but I tell you what, we'll stop here. We'll let you sit back, relax, and listen. This is the 103 clinic that the Indy Air Hogs offered at their fly-in this year. So, and I'd like to thank the Indy Air Hogs. Excellent, excellent fly-in. It was beautiful weather, and to be able to go to something like this was great. A great idea. So, Will Jones talking PPG Radio.
Very impromptu clinic, but.
Hey guys, Will Jones. We are sitting here at Scottsburg at the Indy Air Hogs fly in, and yeah, I did. Sitting here getting ready to go through a airspace clinic, so let's sit back and relax.
Hello everybody.
Hey Dave.
If I forget your name, I'm sorry, but there's a lot of people this weekend.
Here you
go. Thank you. On airspace, more than just an airspace clinic, I wanted, because I fly ultralights too, so I'm a 103 guy. I started flying in 1980. I've flown GA. I got into sport pilot. I fly ultralights, and now thanks to you guys, starting this year, Brandon and Dave and all of them got me interested in PPG, so I'm hoping to be one of your new PPG pilots. I just don't have enough sense to know when to quit, but I love it. It's a lot of fun, and I am extremely happy with the turnout we've had here. It's been great. One thing that I'm really impressed with, and the guys from our club that are here, every week in and week out, they've really noticed a difference from this year to last year's. You guys have been so great, just the way you're flying here at the airport. I mean, it's different, because I know 103 and PPGs are used to flying out of cornfields, out of private property areas and stuff, not used to being around a public use airport, because this is actually a public use FAA controlled airport. So, there's a lot more rules and regulations and stuff here. Everybody has just been great. We've not had any problems, no complaints, not even complaints this year. So everybody, you're doing a super job, except for a little off-field landing in a bean field last night. It's been great. Everybody's been fine.
No, I was just one.
Oh, he was this morning. Here this morning, too.
Yeah, but you weren't landing either.
Yeah. Like I said, we're going to cover just a few things on airspace, and we're also going to cover a few things on safety. And everything that we cover is going to be related to 103, to actual ultralights. I have worked so hard for the last few years to break down the GA barrier, and I'm sure you guys have probably run into this before. The GA, which is general aviation pilots, always look down on ultralights because we're lawn chairs with wings. All right, PBGs, that's even worse. And we have worked real hard to break down the barriers of that, and we're making good progress. Sport pilot came in 2004 of September, is when the sport pilot, which we used to have the fat ultralights, as they called them, the Challenger, the two-seat Challengers that we were training ultralight pilots, and I've got one sitting right outside the window here, or right outside the door. They kept getting faster. They kept getting bigger and heavier. You know, the weight for a 103 legal ultralight is 254 pounds. Well, mine weighs in at 335, but it's an ultralight. The FAA finally said, we're going to have to do something because they're just getting too fast. I had a 14-knot tailwind last year coming back from Floyd Knobs. I was at 135 miles an hour. So, yeah, they finally said we got to do something with these so-called fat ultralights. So that's when they started sport pilot category. Has anybody looked into sport pilot category? Anybody here familiar with it? Okay, we had the ultralights, the 103 legal ultralights, 254 pounds, stall speed 27 miles an hour, no faster than that. And they came up with, they came up with sport pilot, which is it's a category below general aviation and it's above ultralight. You have a top speed of 120 knots, which is 138 miles an hour, no faster than that. You have a service ceiling of 10,000 feet. You can do a little higher than 10,000 feet. Day VFR only, no nighttime flying. You can carry a maximum of one passenger. is not for hire. You can't tow a banner or, you know, sell rides or anything like that. But the neat thing about Sport Pilot, and I fell into this perfectly, you don't have to have a medical certificate. You do not have to have a third-class medical. The reason I'm not at GA level now is because 11 years ago, 1998, I was run over by a semi. I lost, my right leg was cut off. My insides were tore up. I just recently had my 23rd surgery. So there's no way that I can acquire a third-class medical now to get back to GA. So Sport Pilot is great. You know, you're still flying an enclosed cockpit airplane. You're at 120 miles an hour all day long. They run the Rotax engines. They're great on gas. You can do your own maintenance, your own repairs. If you take the 16-hour FAA course, you can do your own annuals. I mean, you're good to go. And the neat thing, it's an experimental category. You can build your own airplane. I built that Challenger. Rick snuck in here somewhere. Rick's built numerous airplanes, and he's a great mechanic. He's hiding back here. He's a great mechanic. And that's the neat thing. You don't have to pay $120 an hour to take it to a licensed AMP to get your work done when, you know, I've seen the work that Rick does. I've seen the work that some of these AMPs do, and I would trust Rick before I trust AMPs. And Rick's a lot cheaper. Rick's a cheap date anyway. So I really like Sport Pilot. If anybody has any interest in getting into, you know, an actual fixed-wing aircraft, or PPCs fall under the Sport Pilot category if they're heavier than 254 pounds and if they're a two-seater. There's, you know, two or three PPCs on the ground. They're an N-number aircraft, but they fall into Sport Pilot category. So if anybody's interested in looking into Sport Pilot or taking the next step, get with me. I'll be glad to get you started out the right direction, show you the ins and outs of it. One of the neater things about Sport Pilot, you can do it's more feasible to do cross-country. We've got some friends of ours, the Indy Flyers, up in Indianapolis, that flew out to Monument Valley, Arizona this year in their Sport Pilot aircraft. Yeah.
I know where it is.
Yeah. They flew out to Monument Valley in a trike, a Vector Sports, or a Sting Sport, which is a low-wing Sport Pilot, but they flew all the way out, flew all the way back. That's a pretty good cross-country flight. And did it in Sport Pilot aircraft and had a great time doing it. So Sport Pilot, I'm really big on it because it opens up a lot of categories. You know, it opens up a lot of fields. You can do cross country. You can get there a little faster. You know, it's just kind of a neat stepping stone. You don't have to go to the GA level, but now you can do cross countries and have Sport Pilot. Now, getting into Sport Pilot, you're going to be faced with a lot more. You know, there's a downside to everything. You're going to be faced with a lot more regulations and control from the FAA. You can tell by the thickness of this book how much fun it is. This is the Federal Aviation's Regulations Manual. We call it FAR-AIM, Federal Aviation Regulation and Aircraft Information Manual. This is all the rules, regulations, and everything that we have to go through, or supposed to abide by. This is the Bible of flying. I'm not trying to drown anybody's fun that we're having. But 103 ultralights, since Sport Pilot category has done so good, I don't expect it to be real long that the FAA starts stepping in to the ultralights. Now, there has been rumor for the last 4 or 5 years that they're going to raise the weight limit of ultralights. It's currently at 254 pounds. They're trying to get it raised up to 326. And a friend of mine that was just at one of the seminars at Oshkosh a couple weeks ago, they're still floating that idea around. So, you know, that would be neat if anybody, you know, you might be able to still be 103 legal and actually fly a Sport Pilot plane. When you get into Sport Pilot, well, even your ultralights qualify, or you're faced with this regulation, but not as much as a Sport Pilot. There's airspace, and that's what we were going to get on today. Like I said, I handed out some sectional charts. How many people ever deal with a sectional chart? All right, so I know it's scary to look at it, but it's not really as bad as it looks. It's, all right, it looks bad. I'll tell you that. It looks real bad. But the sectional charts are not really as bad as they appear at the first time. The best thing to do with this is set it at home some night and with your table and go over the legend. It's very self-explanatory. The airspaces that the FAA has regulated, of course, is the first airspace is A airspace. We will never see A airspace because it begins at 18,000 feet and goes up. So that's your
speak for yourself.
Yeah, that's right. That's all your commercial guys, your big military F-16s, your Delta, Continental, you know. That's the commercial airspace that's way up there. We will probably in our lifetime never see it as pilot in command. B airspace, and there used to be a synonym with remembering all this. B synonym. The B airspace, remember Boeing. All right, B airspace airports like Cincinnati is a B airspace. Heathrow. What's one in New York City?
LaGuardia.
Yeah.
Kennedy.
The bigger the airspace, or the bigger the airport, the bigger the airspace. Now with B airspace, always remember B is in Boeing, because that's where you're going to see all your big commercial guys. That's where you're going to see the big planes that we don't get around. We'll probably never see those as pilot in command either. Yeah, that's right. We don't want to. Your next step down is the C airspace. Now, C airspace, Louisville International is the C airspace. With C airspace, and I wish that I had the other handouts to give you, the best way to remember is a wedding cake turned upside down. You know how the bottom of the wedding cake is bigger than it goes down? Well, they call these the veils of the airspace. And if everybody opens their sectional charts on the bottom right corner, you'll see Louisville International. And you see the outer rings, the magenta, the solid magenta rings. All right, those are usually, it fluctuates with each airport, but that's usually a 25 nautical mile. And that's at the ground level, usually surface. This one goes from surface up to, goes from 1,700 feet up to 4,500 feet. So anything from 1,700 feet MSL, that's not above ground, but this is mean sea level. So if you start out at 600 feet, you've only got 1,100 feet clearance. And at the bottom left of that circle, you'll see the numbers 4517. This is in the, everybody find Louisville in the bottom right?
Yep.
All right, in the bottom left at, say, 7 o'clock, you'll see a 45/17. All right, 4,500 means that's the top of that certain circle. That's the top ceiling of it, 4,500 feet MSL. The 17 below it is the floor. That is 1,700 feet. All right, now where this applies to us, if you're flying in the Louisville International Airport, their controlled airspace begins at 1,700 feet for that outer 25 nautical miles and goes up to 4,500 feet. So unless you have air traffic control clearance, stay out of there. Now, if you were, say you live in a little area and you're flying around, you could actually fly under that as long as you stay under the 1,700 feet. But once you get up 1,700 feet, you're in their controlled airspace, and they really frown upon that. In fact, that, you know, usually costs you a lot of money.
So is that within that donut?
Yeah, within the donut.
Okay. So it doesn't include that center core area?
Well, the center core gets better.
Yeah.
Like I said, it's like an upside-down wedding cake. The outer ring starts at 1,700 feet. On the floor, it goes up to 4,500 feet. All right? Then you see there's a center ring on the inside. See how there's a smaller ring on the inside here?
Solid
magenta. All right, you see the SFC, that's surface. So the center, near the center of the airport, the controlled airspace starts at the surface, which would be your runway. It goes up to 4,500 feet. And that is all controlled. And it kind of tears down. Like the wedding cake. It kind of tears down. 5 to 10. It all depends on the airport. It's usually on a Class C airspace, it's going to be 10 nautical miles. Yes, sir. Or C. No, Louisville is C. Louisville is C, I guess.
B is what? What's it stand for?
Communication.
Okay.
To enter, and then, like I said, it's just kind of an easy way to remember. To enter a C airspace, you have to have C communications, two-way communications with you and air traffic control.
But in this case, we can fly under, stay under 1,700.
On the outer veil.
On the outer veil.
On the outer veil, right. Once you get to the center, it's surface up. Yeah.
Or fly over entirely above 4,500 MSL.
Yeah, now they do have what they call on top. The only thing about flying on top, especially around something like Louisville, you're not legally required to have two-way communications with air traffic control, but it's very, very highly sought after. First of all, you'd be better off just to avoid it. You know, if you were doing a, if you were taking a cross-country trip and Louisville's in front of you, the best thing is just go around it. But, if, you know, you can fly over the top of Louisville International. It would be 4,500 feet on up. Like I said, that's highly unlikely, you know, it's very frowned upon, you know, especially for 103s. Now, if you're, you know, in a Bonanza, Cherokee, something like that, and you want to, you can do that. But the best thing to do is avoid it. The airspace, I'm glad you brought that up. The airspace is, like I said, B, airspace, remember Boeing, the big commercial guys. C, airspace, C is in communications. You have to establish two-way communications with air traffic control before you can enter that airspace. D, airspace, like Columbus, Indiana, which it's not a full-time controlled airport, but D is for dialogue. All right, on the dialogue, meaning before you enter Third Vale, you need to make the call. This is, you know, 2055 Sierra, 25 miles southwest or 10 miles southwest, going to be entered. Dialogue meaning you don't have to establish and be approved to enter the airspace, but you need to put it out on the common air traffic frequency that you are there and you are coming in. You don't have to be approved. With C airspace, you have to, well, I'm going to get this in a minute. With C airspace, you have to have permission to enter. With D airspace, and this is where another little complicated thing, if the, like the tower in Columbus, Columbus is D airspace. If the tower is active during the day, you need permission to enter. If the tower is closed during the evening hours, you do not have to have permission to enter that airspace, but you need to use a common air traffic frequency, which is CTAP, and announce your position, announce that you're entering, announce your, once you get into the airspace and passing through, announce your intentions once you leave. So that's the dialogue.
Are you supposed to be on frequency assigned to that?
Yes, yes.
You're saying common, but it actually needs to be a specific.
Yes, yeah, CTAP, every airport has what they call CTAP, Common Traffic Air Frequency. Ours here is 122.9.
All right. 118.6.
That should be the eight is for them. Ours here is 122.9. Common traffic means anybody coming in, you're not specifically speaking to the tower, you're not specifically speaking to a approach control or departure. It's the common frequency, so anybody, any Tom, Dick, and Harry should be monitoring this field. Like to say, if you're going through Scottsburg and you want to, you know, announce that you're going to land, you can announce your upwind, downwind, whatever. The common frequency that is monitored is 122.9 here. Every airport has a common traffic frequency. They do change. Seymour is 122.8. And they have a small adjustment, so it's not a constant bleed over. Madison is 122.9. Not Madison. Greensburg is 122.9, because that's where they have the jumpers. And that's a good reason of why we have the common frequency. There's a lot of parachute and skydiving done in Greensburg, Indiana. It's one of the busiest around here. They have jumpers all day, every day, if it's weather permitting. Anybody flying through that area, they always announce the jumpers on their common traffic frequency. So if you're going up, if you're doing a cross country and you're coming up, say, well, let me see, Greensburg, Indiana, their common traffic is 122.9. So you switch to it. All of a sudden you hear jumpers and away at 10,000 and below. You know, he's announcing on that frequency that's associated with that airport what's happening in that area. And that's the reason, if you're going to do a cross country, always find out, where's my knee board? Find out where you're going. I know that a lot of you probably won't be doing a lot of cross countries. But if you go to a fly-in at somewhere else, you know, like here at Scottsburg, we're kind of centrally located. That's great. You know, we've got airports around us, but they're 28 miles and 12 miles and 18 miles away. Say they have a new PPG fly-in in Rooster Coot, Arkansas, and we're all going to go. But there's an airport 5 miles up the road from this guy's house that's having the fly-in. The first thing they need to do when you get there is make sure everybody knows the outer boundaries of that airport. They know the common traffic frequency, so you can be educated as to what's going on. Because it's, as a pilot, it's your responsibility to know what's going on around you. It's not their responsibility to tell you. So that's the main thing to remember with airspace. It's, if you're pilot in command, it's your responsibility to know where you're at and what you're doing at all times. Even if it's a cornfield, you know, Dave uses the field right across from the airport in Greenwood up there, and it's a nice setup. It's great. you know, you could get a rookie pilot or somebody that's new from out of town that wants to come in and fly, and he doesn't realize that Greenwood's right across the interstate from him. You know, he just sees some airplanes once in a while. He takes off. Next thing you know, he's at 4,000 feet in the traffic pattern. That's what I mean. Anytime you go anywhere, it's your responsibility to know what's going on around you. You know, what the if there's a controlled airspace around you and how you should avoid it. Airspace is really not that difficult. It's just like when you see a speed limit sign on the interstate that says 70, don't go 75.
Don't go 85.
There you go.
Don't get caught doing 75.
Yeah, don't get caught doing 75. I know with the PPGs, just probably don't... Probably, who does... What is cross-country in a PPG for you guys? 15, 25 miles?
Yeah,
20
out.
Okay. The good thing about you guys, you don't have to... You know, you're not forced with all the...
Go ahead and say it.
All the rules and stuff and all the preparation. That's the word I was looking for, the preparation. Because you're pretty much in a centrally located area. Once you get there, you know what's around you. Because I know y'all stayed, 10 miles from here, except for some of the guys that go out to the quarry. So you're within 10 miles. You know everything that's going on around here in 10 miles. The biggest thing about airspace to remember as a PPG pilot is when you get to an area, look and see what's around you. Find out where you can legally be. You know, it's kind of hard to think of what to explain because you're not doing a cross-country. Boy, if it's cross-country, I could fill you full of stuff all day.
Well, but it's common. If you're doing out on a road trip and you're on your way home from somewhere and say, oh, that looks like a nice field to go fly from, you don't know if there's a military area or some park or something you can't fly over or an airport. Right?
Thank you. I'm glad you reminded me of that. We have MOAs. They're all over the United States. It just seems like Indiana is blessed with them. An MOA is a military operations area, and that's where there is low altitude flying from the military. We have the Indiana Air National Guard of Shelbyville. We have the Kentucky Air National Guard south of Louisville, and there is a lot of low-level military activity in this area. I was actually fortunate enough because we have a real good working relationship with the military here. They use the Civil Air Patrol uses this airfield to run some of their emergency crashed airplane maneuvers. The generals and the colonels and everybody from the Air National Guard have come to our safety seminar to help us out. So we've got a real good working reputation or working relationship with the military. I called them a couple months ago, explained to them that we were having this fly in here, and I said, can we keep the military jets, the F-16s, out of the air? They said, no problem. Because there's an MOA just about 5 miles north of here. And that's a military operations area. And those F-16s can come down as low as 500 feet above the ground. Now, yes, sir?
Can you point that out on our sectional?
Yeah.
We
all right. So, well, we know Louisville is 29 miles south of us, so it goes to come 20. You need a map, sir.
Just find Scottsburg and it's right there.
Coming straight up out of Louisville is I-65. All the little squiggly lines, you find I-65. Follow it straight up about 4 inches and you'll find Scottsburg, Indiana. Everybody find Scottsburg yet? All right, just if you see just a couple miles north, there is a rectangular...
The upper right-hand corner of that box.
There's a rectangular box that runs kind of east-west, northeast-west, and it says JPGAMOA. That's Jefferson Proving Grounds Military Operations Area. And that's also where my house is located, trust me. They can come down to 500 feet floor. Now, this is an F-16 at 400 miles an hour. Last year, I had one. I was at 1,800 feet in my Challenger, and I had an F-16 fly underneath me. Now, after an underwear change and getting my hands to quit shaking, if you think they're loud on the ground, you ought to hear one go underneath you. And the bad thing, I was just north of the airport. I had actually just climbed out of the airport. I wasn't even a mile north. I wasn't in the MOA. He was a little bit south of the MOA. But at 400 miles an hour, an F-16 that weighs 60,000 pounds, you can't argue with it. And they are coming so fast, they run from west to east with the MOA, and at that speed, by the time it registers in your mind that, wow, that's a jet, he's already passed you and under you. So that's right there is a real good reason that sectional charts, like say, like Ola said, if you're coming down and you see a beautiful field, say, man, this would be a nice place to go flying. What if it's an MOA? You know, there's no activity now, but you get up and you go flying around, and all of a sudden you got F-16s darting around you.
Are we allowed to fly in them, or are we just, I know we should avoid them.
Right.
But,
with,
like,
I'm sorry.
We allowed to fly, I mean, with, if the FAA official saw us, we'd say, that's an MOA.
All right, with, there are different areas. An MOA is a military operations area, and I'm going to break this one down real quick before I answer your question. Do you see how that, you see the rectangle, and it has the little slits all the way around it? Everybody found that? All right, there's two parts to that box. The left-hand side, you see there's like a small left-hand side that's, it's still part of the box, but it's got like a small wall in it. Everybody find that?
Yep.
All right, that left one is JPG-A MOA. That's part A of that military operations area. There they have a floor of 1,800 feet, I believe it is.
Surface to 4,000.
No, it can't be surface there.
No, from surface, but not a bit, just to the left of the box.
All right. Their floor, the floor of A is 4,000 feet. Right. It excludes the surface up to 4,000. So they come down as low as 4,000. That's how they set up for Part B, which is where my house is located. When they enter the MOA box, they can come down as low as 4,000. Now, once they get to Part B, which is right there connected to it, the floor is 500 feet HEL. So that gives them a chance, you know, because they're traveling fast. You can't just drop down like that. So they're coming in at 4,000. They start to drop down to 500. And they'll follow that to the end of it, to the end of the MOA. And you'll notice there is a...
Let's see where we're written the floor on this one.
I'm sorry?
I'm trying to find the floor on this one. Where do you say that?
This one's 500.
But how do you know that?
Well, it's...
I'm trying to see
it,
where
I don't believe it's on here. It's just...
over here. It's written out. But
right.
And then you have you, so you're going to get into this one.
Right.
This is restricted.
Yeah. Now, at the end of the MOAB, which has a 500-foot floor, you're going to see a blue slashed area that goes north-south. All right? And you see an R in front of it. That's R-3401, or excuse me, JPK should be
three.
Yeah, R-3403 means restricted. That means for no reason whatsoever are you supposed to be there, and you can call anybody you want. They're not going to let you be there. That's the military's playground. Anytime you see an R, it's a restricted airspace. You're not going to get permission to fly through there. So just stay away from it. Avoid it at all costs. Now, if you were to get caught in a restricted airspace, like say you had a GPS malfunction or you lost your dead reckoning bearings, you just got put over there, they'll yell at you. They might find you. They might pull your pilot's license. They might ground your aircraft for a while. You do it twice, you've lost your aircraft. It'll become property of the state or property of the government, and somebody else will own it in an auction. So avoid any restricted airspace every time. If it has an R, it's restricted. Now, if you want to look up information on that, at Jefferson Proving Grounds over there, it's R-3403. Just up north, straight up Interstate 65, about another couple inches up from Scottsburg, you'll see R-3401. That's Camp Atterbury. That's Camp Atterbury, which is the big military base up there, just north of Columbus. Now here's a good point. Say some friends said, let's go to Columbus and go flying. All right, they can get you around Columbus, Indiana. You know where the airport is. You need to avoid the airport. But a lot of people get complacent and say, well, here's the airport. As long as I stay away from the airport, I'm okay. But if you look right up there to the just a little bit north of Columbus is Camp Atterbury. And there's also an MOA that runs next to it. If you get caught in Camp Atterbury, you probably won't even get the first warning. Now, if you were flying up there and say, you know, if you're in an ultralight, you're, you know, we're going to say, guys, get down, get out of here, or they, you know, might come by with the F-16s and they point to the ground. If you ever see an F-16 pointing to the ground, it means land now. If you don't, he'll land you. Especially since 9/11 and Homeland Security, there was an older gentleman and his wife that left New Jersey this spring. Left New Jersey, they were headed to Savannah, Georgia. Yes, he's a GA pilot. He should have known where he was going. He should have got his sectional chart out and planned his route and had everything ready. Well, he didn't. He flew through Washington, D.C. Not only did he have one F-16, he had 10 F-16s. I don't know why the reasoning. He could not find the right channel. Everybody's, you know, the F-16s are flying right past him, telling him to the ground now. He's like, well, I can't hear you on the radio. I can't find what channel you're on. I'm just going to keep flying. Well, they followed him until he got out of airspace, and it just got so bad as he got closer to the Capitol, they're going to put him on the ground. You know, they don't want to kill nobody, but, you know, after 911, they will put you on the ground. You know, they could see by looking at him, this was an elder gentleman and his wife. They really didn't think he was a terroristic threat, but they still, I don't care who you are, if you get near the Capitol, they're putting you on the ground.
One way or another. If
they have to, yes.
Oh, my God.
Now what they do, they'll just keep flying closer and closer and closer and closer until you think, I gotta get out of here, this guy's gonna. And hopefully you never let it go that long. Hopefully the main thing is you always do your pre-flight, you do your planning, you don't get in that situation to start with. That's like I said, you know, the big airspace. The best way to fix it is to avoid it.
Well, back then, where could he have landed though?
Well,
in the middle of Washington, D.C.
Well, they're hoping.
Nowhere you can go.
They try to raise them on the radios. You know, they try to raise this gentleman. Usually they can contact somebody on the radio because they've got radios that will scan everything and find it just like that. You know, he has, in a GA plane, you have your transponder, which is the beacon that sends the signal back to the air traffic control so they know your altitude. It's an altitude encoding mode C transponder. They know your altitude. They know your IN number because it's registered to that plane. They know who you are. And if you filed a flight plan, they know where you're going. So hopefully they can bring you on the radio somehow. He never figured out how to find him on the radio. Yes, sir.
Going back to Atterbury, that means that this restricted airspace is a column that goes up to space.
Infinity. Yes, thank you. Any restricted airspace, like Camp Atterbury, Fort Knox, where they hide all the gold, any restricted airspace is from surface to infinity. Even the space shuttle don't fly over it when he gets out there. And if he did, I'm sure somebody at the FAA would yell at him for it. And not to pick on the FAA, because I know...
shoot him down.
Not to get off track, but let me tell you how picky they are. And I'm not picking on the FAA, because they have a job to do just like the Indiana State Police, and that's to keep us safe. You know, we've got T-shirts that says FAA. We're not happy till you're not happy. But they're really not, you know. They always get a bad rap because you never hear about the FAA unless somebody's complaining. You know, that's like about your local furniture store. You'll never hear anything about it unless somebody had a bad experience with them. You never hear anybody say anything good. The FAA is really pretty good to work with.
Okay, we've done B, C, and D. Is there an A?
Yes, A airspace is the airspace that starts at 18,000 feet and goes up commercial only. Yeah, we'll never see that.
It stands for?
Sorry, altitude.
Altitude.
Altitude. It's just kind of whatever word that... Getting there. I'm getting there. It actually goes, our airspace designation goes all the way through to G. We even have a G airspace, which we call great, because that means it's open airspace. You can do anything you want, any altitude you want, any speed, any time, any way you want. And there is some. Yeah, that's mostly where you guys try to stay. And that's the best place to be. I forgot what I was going to say.
You're talking about why we're talking about the FAA.
Oh, yeah. Yes, yes. Talk about how picky the FAA can be. Is anybody familiar with a lady named Patty Wagstaff? Okay, Patty Wagstaff is by far one of the most incredible aerobatic pilots for the last 20 years. Patty is, she does stuff with an extra 300 that physically cannot be done. She somehow does it. She's an aerobatic pilot. She's been known for that for like 20 years. She's been doing air shows. She's won every accolade, every award there is to win. Patty Wagstaff is the name synonymous with aerobatics. At Oshkosh last year, after Patty did her show, and she does shows all through the week. Well, this is Saturday night at Oshkosh. Patty put on another incredible show. And, you know, seeing Patty Wagstaff is like seeing the president. You pretty much let them do what they want, go where they want, because, you know, they have really, they've got a big stature in life. Well, Patty went to a party that night on Saturday night. Her show, she didn't have a Sunday show. She was done. She went to one of the on-site parties at Oshkosh. I think it was a insurance party that some of her friends were at, and there had been some alcoholic drinks served. She was by no means drunk or inebriated, but she had alcohol. Well, that night, and this is comical because Patty should know Oshkosh Airport better than anybody, but that night, leaving the party on the way back to her big motor coach where she stays, she did not get on the service road. She got on the taxiway. And a new recruit policeman at Oshkosh is the one that stopped her on the taxiway at midnight driving a car. And he smelled the alcohol on her breath. And of course, he instantly arrested her. You know, instead of calling his boss and everything, and she said, "Do you know who I am?" And he said, "Well, do you know who I am?" So long story short, you know, we was trying to get Patty Wagstaff down to do a show, air show that we were working on at French Lick, and they said, "What would it cost?" And I said, "Well, at least a six-pack." Patty Wagstaff has done more for aviation and aerobatics. You know, I mean, she's like the Wright brothers. Everything she has done has been positive and great. You know, you cannot say a bad thing about her. They still busted her. You know, they didn't give her a warning. They didn't give her a slap on the wrist. They took her to court.
Wow. So she cannot fly anymore?
They grounded. I forget what the full extension was. She was grounded. They suspended her aerobatic license for a certain amount of time.
Wow.
Which is hard to imagine because Patty Wack, that would be like telling the president, "Well, you double parked, you're not going in the White House this week." So, you know, it's not that the FAA is hard to get along with. It's just they've got a job to do and they're very, very stern about it. But all in all, as pilots, if you do your pre-flight, your pre-planning, you know, if you know where you're going and you do your job, you'll never have a problem with it. We have the fly-ins here. We've helped with the ones in Madison, Sellersburg, Salem, all the different air shows. If you do your homework and know where you're going, which it's really your responsibility as a pilot. It really is. It's your responsibility to know what you're doing. You'll never really have problems with anybody. You won't. It's just like learning to drive. You know, if you have your insurance and you're driving the right side of the road and you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, you won't have a problem. It's the same way with flying. Airspace, you know, because a friend of mine asked me the other day, he said, "Well, how do you keep from hitting somebody head on when you're flying?" All right, is anybody familiar with VFR separation? I know, Greg, you guys are. Paul is. VFR separation starts at 3,000 feet, and that is MSL. At 3,000 feet, you know, if you've got a whole bunch of planes coming into an air show, how do you keep them from hitting head on? VFR separation works like this. On a compass rose, on a circle, on your compass, it starts at 0 degrees, swings all the way around to 360 degrees. North is at 0, south is at 180, east is at 90, west is 270 degrees on the compass rose. Everybody got this? All right, on the right side of your compass rose, if you're flying north through the east or to the south, northeast, you're flying an odd altitude plus 500 feet. All right, now this begins at 3,000 feet. So if you're on the right side of your compass rose, 0 to 180 degrees, you're flying at 3,500 feet altitude, 5,500 feet, 7,500 feet. It's an odd 1,000 plus 500. So if you're headed north or east, if you're headed that direction, you should be at an odd altitude plus 500 feet. Now, on the left side of the compass rose, if you're from the south flying to the west, or if you're north headed south, as long as you're on the left side of the compass rose, 180 degrees or more, you're flying an even 1,000 feet plus 500. So you would start at 4,500 feet, 6,500 feet, 85, and so forth. And that's how it's called VFR separation. That's how you keep from hitting head on with another plane. know, you see two guys coming this way, you think, well, how are they going to miss each other? Well, hopefully this guy is at, like, say, 4,500 feet, and this guy's at 5,500 feet. That gives you 1,000 feet separation. I know a lot of events don't get over 3,000 feet, but if you do, you fall into the control of VFR separation. It's your responsibility to be there. Yep, just last week. Yep, and all nine, was it? I think there was nine total dead. Yes, sir?
These blue circles that have marks all the way around.
All right. That's the next thing. Let's go to the legend on the bottom right of your sectional chart. And I tell you what, another thing too, like I said, I had the nice brochures and pamphlets that explains everything we're going to go over. It just didn't make it to my mailbox in time, so I've got some business cards. If anybody would like to leave me your address, I'll get this in the mail. These pamphlets, you know, they're very handy. You can keep them in your, you can keep them with you anywhere you want, you know, keep them in your flight bag, keep them in your car. But there's information, this is just a sample of one, but there's information on all these pamphlets that, shoot, I've been flying since 1980. I forget stuff. I really do. There's a lot to it. But if anybody would like to leave me your address, I'll make sure that I get that mailed out to you. I'll get you all the pamphlets and stuff. And I'll even pick up a bunch of these from the FAA because they give them to me free. It's your tax dollars hard at work. This is a neat little calendar, but it has the 12 common causes of human error in the aviation world. I think that's two on the list now.
Two on the list.
But I'll make sure y'all get some of those. All right. Brandon brought up a good point. Everybody to the legend on the bottom right of the sectional chart. All right. And like I said, if it gets too hot in here, we'll slide a door. I'm just trying to keep the sun from baking us. All right. Your airspaces, now that we know there's A, B, C, there's actually goes through G, and I'll get to those in a minute, but you have your airspaces, your A, B, C, and D. They're color-coded. You notice the airports have a magenta. There is a magenta that's a dark solid. There is a magenta circle that's kind of a airbrush look. You'll see some circles that are dark blue. You'll see some circles that are kind of airbrush blue. Those are the different airspaces surrounding each airport. In the legend, at the bottom right, you'll see the top, it says airports, and you'll see the magenta and the blue, which is a hard, and we call them hard and soft circles. The hard circle means that it's dark, like bold. Soft circle is the one that's kind of airbrushed effect. Okay. The dark blue circle, right up above the legend, you'll see a bunch of big blue dark circles on the right on your sectional chart. There's great big mess over there. That's Cincinnati. That's your B airspace right there. That's Cincinnati. And yes, Cincinnati, if anybody asks, Cincinnati is bigger than Indianapolis. Indianapolis is just C. And that's those, what it, the color code defines the class of airspace that airport is listed in. Your B is the dark blue. The real dark blue is your B airspace. All right. The lighter blue, or the what I call the airbrush or soft blue, which is one that's kind of sketchy, that's going to be your C airspace. All right. Then you get to magenta. And they don't call it burgundy, red, or pink. It's magenta. They'll argue it's magenta. The dark magenta is your D airspace. And then the airbrush, of course, is your E airspace.
C.
Yes.
It's a D, so.
I'm sorry. My mind's working. It's just not working today.
Good thing.
Yes, sir.
So, like here, for instance, this line just start playing with the hash marks?
No, that's the OR. That's the OR.
That's a navigation report.
Right. Well, yeah, nothing for your face. No, I'll show you the name. This is the dark blue.
Yeah.
on the second, kind of the middle of the page, you're going to see a VHF or a VORTAC or a BORDME. You'll see these little blue triangle-looking things. Yeah, all right. Now, if you look on your page just to the southwest of Louisville, you're going to see a blue line with little hash marks around it.
Blue circle.
See this? The hash marks. That blue circle. Alright, that circle that's southwest, you see, it's just a straight blue circle and it has hash marks. You notice it's set up as a compass rose. Zero at the top, 180 at the bottom. Alright, that is a VOR. And if you'll read up there on a VOR, that is a omni range. That's what we used to use in the old days for navigation. That is a beacon or a directional finding beacon that sends out the homing beacon that your plane will pick up so you can set your HSI. And how they used to fly before GPS has come along, the equipment in your plane will pick up that beacon and you can fly right to that beacon. So you know you're going exactly to that center of that. All right, those marks on the outside of that, it's a compass rose, we call them radials. So if you're flying straight in from the west at 270 degrees, you know, exactly due west, you're flying the 27 radial. If you're flying straight up, and this is self-explanatory, if you're flying straight up from the south, it's the 180 radial. Make sense?
Radial.
If you're coming from over here.
Radial.
If you're flying straight west, you're on the 27 radial.
And you come from here.
Right.
This one you can see from there, right?
Right. Yeah, there's one that's just right. There's actually a VOR just about 3 miles right over here southwest of us. The NAV VOR. Everywhere. Which is dialogue, means that you need to have to announce your position. Alright? There's an E airspace. E airspace is the places it's out away from, like say, west of Scottsburg. You don't see anything here, right? E airspace. Remember, everywhere. That means there's really nothing in that area that has a restriction as far as an airport, as far as altitude, or a floor limitation. E stands for everywhere. When you find the airspace, you can fly anywhere you want. Of course, you don't want to buzz homes. You don't want to chase cows and turkeys through the lots. Farmers really get ticked over that. E airspace, remember, everywhere. Sorry?
Depends on where you're at.
Well, that's true.
When I was up in Albuquerque, New Mexico, the farmer actually wanted to chase
them. Oh, he wants to bring them in.
To get them, put the doors in the... Yeah, we got requested to chase cows.
Yes, sir. Okay. Paul's got a good point. What is the actual required distance that you have to maintain from a business structure and open assembly of people? You're supposed to make, like, if you want to fly over town here, you're supposed to maintain 2,000 feet AGL, above ground level, for an open assembly of people. All right, now if they're having a fair or a county race or something, you need to be 2,000 feet above them. The reason why, if you do have an engine out, if you do have a wing folds off, they say 2,000 feet or reasonable altitude that you can correct or avoid a disastrous situation. But they like the 2,000 feet better than they like the or. Now, as far as you're out flying around the field or somewhere, you know, you're not over, and they call it an open assembly of people. It's exactly how the FAA writes it, meaning towns, congested areas. One thing they use as an example of a congested area is the clover leaves off the interstate. You're coming up 65, the clover leaves that come in, they call that a congested area. So it doesn't necessarily have to be people per se. It could be, of course, there's people driving cars, but a congested area. Open assembly of people would be like a fair, a rock concert. You know, you're flying over the Kenny Chesney concert outside. Be at least 2,000 feet, and they'll probably ask you to avoid it altogether. Sometimes, like football games, Indianapolis, they usually put out first of all, you need to avoid it, but if you see a TFR, temporary flight restriction, Anytime, you can always tell where the president is because there's a TFR up. All right, TFR, when he flies into Louisville, the TFR comes like 50 miles outside of Louisville. It comes up here to Scottsburg. Temporary flight restriction means whenever that president's in town, you don't fly. Even though we're 30 miles up north of Louisville, we're away from the president, I don't care. You're grounded. Anytime you see a TFR, and you can, a good place to go is FAA.gov. You can find any information on airspace, on temporary flight restrictions, on any question you could ever have on FAA.gov, and it's very user-friendly. Even you know, if you don't look into this stuff a lot, it's very user-friendly. You can always get your answers. Yes, sir.
Well, I was just curious what the functional difference was between the E and G airspace.
Okay.
And kind of
E and G airspace changes with daylight hours. E airspace could be around, I'm trying to think of a good example. Most of you are from Indianapolis. All right, say Columbus has an operating control tower. If you're outside of the Columbus airspace, if you're outside of the airport's airspace, if that tower is operating that day, it's usually in an E airspace. Outside of it, that means you can fly anywhere. Now, if that tower is closed, like you say on a Sunday, or if the tower is not operating, it becomes a G airspace. The G airspace rating, the only difference is, on E airspace, it's got a floor of 1,200 feet. On G, it'll come down to 700 feet. And it shows the difference in the legend there. That's really the biggest difference. We always look for G because it's great. E airspace, you can fly everywhere. G airspace is even funner because it's great. You know, the only thing it does, it drops the floor down so you can legally fly close to the ground. And like Paul was saying, you know, if you're out flying around a farmer's field, if you get prior permission to the farmer, you know, like say you found this big field and you love it, if you want to go up to the farmer and say, hey, do you mind if I land in your field or something out here? That's fine. If you haven't talked to the farmer personally, and you know, you don't know if he's going to get mad if you're there or not, I would suggest at least maintain 1,000. The FAA will let you come down to 500 feet without creating a dangerous... If you can fly down 500 feet without creating a dangerous situation, you can do that. But it's always better to remember 1,000 feet will keep you on the safe side of error.
Okay, G is great. F is what?
There is no F.
There's no F.
There is no F.
No,
don't know why.
I know. Just
yes. Well, I'm afraid too many pilots would pick up on that and come up with their own idea. And like I said, I've got plenty of business cards. If anybody give me your address or a mailing address where I can send the stuff to, as soon as it comes in from the FAA, which, in fact, I'll check to see if it's at the house now. But as soon as it comes in, I'll be glad to mail it out to you because I got tons of pamphlets and the nice calendars and stuff. It was supposed to go out Tuesday and it's still not here. And I'm not going to say it's the FAA. I'm not going to say that. I'm going to go.
Could be the Postal
Service. That's true. Don't make them mad, though. They'll shoot you.
Yeah. It's still our family. Yeah.
We may have already taken off on Saturday. We just don't know about it yet.
Yeah. And like I said, if anybody has, I know it's short, and I apologize for getting started late. We were just kind of getting chairs and stuff, so that was very condensed and trying to throw everything at you real fast.
Well, all right. There you go. Indy Air Hogs 103. Airspace, a little bit of everything there. And like I said, I want to thank David Graves here for giving us some information. I'm going to try to get some more information. Maybe I'll call him and talk to him more about it so you have a little clearer sound. Hopefully you were able to pull everything out, and hopefully there was actually, like I said, some information there that you could use. Like I said, if you are flying and you haven't looked at a sectional chart where you're flying at, the area that you're flying in, do. It's better safe than sorry, so I don't want you to end up on the nose of an F-16 jet or even in the motor. You know, neither one is a good situation. So, Indy Air Hogs flying, guys. Think about it next year. It'll be a third annual. Hopefully they'll offer something like this again, and maybe some of the other fly-ins will offer something like this too. So I'm going to stop there. I thank you again for listening. Like I said, we're going to kind of transition into more training content type thing. So I got a couple of people I need to call and set up some some shows, and we'll go from there. Like I said, I always say, check talkingppgradio.com. My contact information there is there. Give me a call if you have any questions or you have an idea that you'd like to come on the show and just talk and chit-chat. So don't be afraid. It's very easy, very easy, no pain at all, I promise. Hey, Will Jones, Talking PPG Radio. See you soon. Thanks. Thank you.